Hello, you're listening to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. If some of our discussions and tips are working for you, why don't you grab a 15-minute call with us at ecommercecall.com. We'll see whether we can help scale your e-commerce business. We will quickly see if we're a fit or whether we can recommend someone else to get you where you need to go. The worst case is you'll have a fun 15-minute chat, and regardless, you'll come away understanding a lot more about your business. Book a call at ecommercecall.com. Hello, and welcome to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. This week, we're going to be looking at a homeware e-commerce business and how to scale that and how that differs from some of the other businesses we've talked about before. So we're going to get into particularly the job to be done, talking about the voice of the brand and really what's important for this type of business, because we've worked a lot in these types of businesses and seen the scale over the years. So what's important, what we need to do and how we do it. So let's get started. Hi Ian, how are you?
Hi, very well. How are you doing?
Good. I'm good. So today we thought we'd talk about an e-commerce site selling homeware, because we've done a lot of homeware over the years and got some stories to tell. And we thought we'd go through the Mojo process, but I think the most important one for homeware is the job to be done. So I thought we'd start with that first, because it's so important to get this right, to get these sales right, that we'll start there and we maybe dive around the Mojo process, but we'll go through them because they are obviously important. But like, just from your experience, I mean, I don't know, we've probably done millions and millions of homeware over the years.
Millions? I wouldn't say millions. I would say maybe 10.
10 million.
Enough.
Yeah.
I think we've done it. We've worked with quite a lot, and ones that have scaled.
Yeah.
And, you know, because it's significantly up to, well, one or two of them have done up to 20 million.
I didn't mean we work with millions of clients doing homeware. What I meant was our clients have done millions.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yes. That's true. Yes.
That makes more sense.
True.
Yeah.
And sorry. And so, I think the interesting thing is what you were saying about there, the job to be done, and it's there's something that happens with successful e-commerce businesses, and I know we were chatting about this when I was going for a run this week, and it's like sometimes people happen to do something by mistake that then works. And I see this often with that job to be done. So the businesses that really understand their customers, and some of these business owners, we know they really get the tone of voice and they understand why their customers want to buy their product.
Yeah.
Like, they understand the job to be done. And I know that. And I think they don't even know. And you know where sometimes you can speak to, you know, the owners and they get really, really pedantic about their copy and their imagery. And you think, oh, my God, it's only, you know. But actually, those are the people that really understand the brand. And what they're doing is, once these homeware companies, once they understand the brand, the job to be done, they're increasing desirability because they're getting that brand right. And they're increasing it. And if you, and in the homeware world, if you have got no desirability of product, nothing else works. Because if you've got crap imagery, you've just plonked product on a page, it just isn't enough. You know, it's about the desirability of product with this, because you're selling something that is going to enhance somebody's life. It's an emotional product. It's not a problem solving product.
But can
so
I ask?
You've got to fundamentally, yeah.
Because I think you know, people say, understand your customer, and it's used so much, and I think it's used so much that it's a throwaway term. It's like, yeah, just understand your customer. But like, what does that actually mean in terms of the customers? Obviously, I know with the one you're talking about. How did she understand the customer? What process did she go through to understand the customer? And I've obviously got some techniques to do that. But what process did she go through to be able to understand what voice
Because it's about the voice of the site, yeah. isn't it? And it's who's yeah. talking. So a little aside, yeah. when I was learning to do copywriting about 10 years ago, there was a legendary copywriter from America. And the first thing he had to do on his course was find the most famous copywriting, long copywriting adverts in that you'd ever done. And you had to write them out. And it took me about 4 or 5 weeks to write them out. But what came out of it was that each one, what was important was who was talking in that piece. And that's why it worked. Like one of them was selling supplements, so it was a doctor. Another one was a housewife or something because she was selling something in the home. You know, these were obviously very old adverts, but it was the voice that was written about. So when you're talking about understand the customer, it's really the thing is, it's understand who the customer would listen to about this product. And once you understand that, who they'd listen to, it's like, well, what would they say to them to make them buy? So what would you say was the process people go through to actually start to understand the customer rather than just saying, yeah, you've got to understand your customer. So,
I think you've got to put yourself in their shoes. What if you understand the job to be done, you understand the buying process that they go through.
Yeah.
And you know that they're not going to buy on their first visit. And actually, they don't care about the offer architecture yet, or they don't care about the returns policy or the delivery cost or, you know, whether or not it's fragile or whatever. Or they care about how it makes them feel. So it's like, because if you're selling a problem-solving rational purchase, you know, it's not about desirability of product. It's about will it solve that problem? And you know, you need to make sure the specs right and the reassurances are right. But when you're selling a lifestyle product, you have to start with that desirability because you can't just throw an offer, you know, on there and expect people to buy. Like the offer architecture is much further down the line. The only reason we talk about offer architecture is because it gives people a reason to buy now, not later. Buy.
Yeah.
Later. And we know that people, no one needs your product. If you're selling a homeware, they don't need it. They want, they like it. They don't need it.
Yeah.
So
in the first rate, the homepage is very much about telling the user that they are in, or convincing them that they're in the right place. So not necessarily about individual products. It's more about the look and the feel and the voice. And it's like, do they get this? I am trying to create my lounge to be this look that I've seen maybe in a magazine or something on television. Do they get that? So it's a very aesthetic thing. And it's a very
intangible thing. The homepage really has to convince people that you should bother investing your time in this website. Yeah. You know, so that's all it has to do. It has to get them off the homepage and into the journey, but it has to convince them fundamentally that they should spend time here.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that's why the homepage should not bounce more than 25% ever. Like if your homepage is bouncing more than 25%, you know, you're not doing that job. You're not convincing people that they should spend, because they basically go, am I going to find what I want here? You know, should I continue down this journey? So just like, you know, when you're walking down the shop in the high street, you know, you think, well, should I go into that shop? Yeah. No, because I don't like the look of it. So I'm not going to go in. That's what the homepage is. So start there, 25%.
The homepage has two jobs. First of all, convince them in the right place for this look and feel. So say, yes, this is the right place. This is the right voice. This is the right, you know, shop for me for this task that I'm trying to do. And then the second thing it needs to do is to quickly sift them into the areas where they're doing. Because obviously everybody coming to the homepage site, they're not all coming to do their bathrooms. They're not all coming to
buckets,
do the,
yeah.
you know, it's the buckets. So you've got to get them there and you've got to get them. And selling by look is much better because then they'll buy more products.
Yeah. And just remember with the homepage, actually the homepage is very important for homeware sites because what people, as I say, they don't buy on the first visit. So they come back and they might land on the product page, but then when they come back, they often come back through the homepage.
Yeah.
So it reinforces all of that. So the homepage is, you know, it's like the banners are quite important. So, you know, just remember, you know, just because you're getting tired of a homepage banner, your customers might only be coming on twice a year. You know, you should lead with your biggest, best banner.
Yeah.
At the top, you know, that's your biggest, best sellers. It's relevant to everybody. You know, and, you know, if you can't do any
and
personalization.
Also, on a mobile, if you think about the homepage, people are coming back. You know, on a mobile site, you want to see recently viewed products on the bottom of the homepage, because
that's the bare minimum. Yeah.
Because then you can go, oh, that's what I was looking at last time. I don't have to go and search the whole site to find that lamp again. You know, it makes it very easy.
Well, you know what? I think just before we kind of move on, like some examples, I actually think in terms of the mathematics of homeware sites, like what I notice in terms of the stats is that you can often have a problem with the add to basket and the basket to checkout stats. Mm-hmm. So now most e-commerce sites, if they're going to struggle with one, they tend to struggle with the add to basket. And once you've done that, then basket to checkout and checkout to order tend to be okay. But with homeware sites, you find that the add to basket stat can be low, but then also they use the basket as a dumping ground because they're using it just to go, oh, yeah, quite like that.
I'll have a look at that.
And I'll go further. And that's, and you find that, you know, so we obviously add to basket stat should be 10%. Basket to checkout should be 55%. Checkout to order should be 85%. And whereas the homewares, you can find that, you know, an add to basket might be 7%. But the basket to checkout, which should be 55, can be like 30%. Mm. Because they're leaving it there. And like I say, no one needs your homeware products, but they want them. So you have not done the sale. Like you're miles away. So your basket, when they get to the back, what's that cuckooing in the background?
In the wildlife of New Zealand.
So the basket page is a fundamental part of it. But the basket page is where you start to, you reinforce that you're going to get rid of the anxieties. There's no risks here. And you add the element of scarcity and urgency into it. So you're essentially saying, look, you don't miss out. You've got to give them a reason to act now. So, you've got to create desirability of product. Certainly, and you've obviously got to present the product in a way that obviously goes through the whole checklist that we go through on the product page. You know, you've got to make sure that the of any industry, this is where they shop around. Like, so they go, they don't buy the first wicker basket they land on. So on your if you're Google shopping and they're clicking through in a wicker basket, lands your product page, they're never going to go and buy the first wicker basket, because they want to know, are there any other wicker baskets that this business sells that I like more, even if they love that product.
It's not like buying brake pads. It's something that people enjoy doing. They enjoy creating this thing.
So you find the page views per site per visit is high.
Yeah,
they're clicking around a lot.
Yeah,
and that's fascinating, because, you know, and that's what you do in a store. You know, you want to go over to the if you're in a beautiful homeware store and you're looking at some flower arranging or whatever, you know, some little vases, you want to see all the vases.
And also there's sometimes a second decision maker there. You know, my wife goes and finds everything she's interested in, and she goes, Mark, what do you think of this, this, and this? And then I say that they're all amazing, and she gets annoyed with me because I can't have an opinion that I don't like the one she likes.
Well, there's a decision making, isn't there? But I think that's in the basket. I think at this stage it's like, you know, you're essentially we're saying a couple of things. Number one, there can be a problem with add to basket, and we obviously know that that is directly linked to the bounce rate. So we're obviously looking for above 10% add to basket, and if you're selling homeware and your add to basket rate is low, it will be only one thing. It'll be because you're product page is bouncing too high, and it's a huge problem for homeware site. Anybody selling particularly an emotional type product, and
it's because you haven't created the vision.
Well, you haven't created the vision, but you also haven't recognized that people don't buy the first product they land on, especially for an emotional one. So consider this. Copper, obviously, there's trends, isn't there, that happen in homeware. You know, like lighting, it's just copper. And then people say it's going to be, now it's concrete. You know, it's going to be concrete stuff. Everyone wants concrete things, concrete tables. There's new copper. Yeah, and it's like, so you therefore, you landed them on a page from Google Shopping. You want to see something that says, you know, view all copper lighting.
Yeah, see other copper lamps.
And show them lots of products that are ready. Because they want, A, it gives them the feeling that this is there's a core category here, that they're bound to find what their copper lamp that they want, because they can see a lot of us. And you're giving them, it's not a dead end page.
Well, that leads on to... Why don't you talk about the that big homeware store that we built? Came to us, they were doing about 2 million and I think doing about 5 million by the end of it. So,
yeah,
the two stories from that. First of all, was like how to do a category. So, talk about that story and then also talk about the other story about how they scaled. So, what was wrong with the categories? Why couldn't they recruit?
Okay, so well, traditionally, this is a business. They were actually doing 5 million when we met them. Yeah. Okay. And they'd been doing 5 million for 3 years. They couldn't get past 5 million. Now, this was about 8 years ago. And all they'd done was bought home products from a supplier. Like, everybody's heard of Coach House. If you're selling homeware, you'll have heard of Coach House. It's a big supplier up in the north. And it used to be where everybody got their stuff. And all this particular company did was bought stuff from them and photographed it better than everybody else and then charged more money for it. And so why did that work? Well, first of all, they increased the desirability of their products because the product looked better. So obviously the images were great. So you were buying into that lifestyle. You know, you didn't want that little star, you know, your candle. You know, you wanted theirs because it looked better. So that was the first thing they did, and that got them to, you know, to a significant point. And then they said, well, we want to get past this point. And basically the numbers were wrong. Like the numbers were bad. So their average order value was only £35, and their lifetime customer value was only 1.5 times a year, and that's very difficult. If you've got an average order value of £35 and you're only getting people buying 1.5 times a year, it's pretty hard to scale when you factor in the cost of recruitment. And so we had to change those metrics. So average order value was the first one. So we can't scale your business if your average order value is £35. It's too low. We've got to get that higher. And what they were doing is selling lots of small items. And we said, look, you need to put a core range together. You know, we've got to go and find core categories, because the only two ways to get your average order value up is more expensive product or more items per order. That's it. So we're already doing quite a bit of more items per order. What we really wanted to was to go and find things that people were searching for online. So we went into the market, we did a load of keyword analysis, and we said, look, we think that people are searching for mirrors, chandeliers, rugs, and stools. And we went, well, we can't sell mirrors because that's a pain, because it's going to break. Can't sell chandeliers because it's too fragile. So let's go and do stools and rugs. That's what we did, and the client went and got them on back order, and didn't even, you know, put them on the website when we could see what was happening, you know, to see if we could sell them, and they did, and their average order value went up from 35 to 85 pretty much. Yeah, and this was some of it was to the existing customers, some of it was to new customers we could recruit on it, so that really really helped. I think game changer.
One thing that you missed a bit on that story, which is important, is obviously I'm obviously buying the traffic from AdWords and those kind of places. Now, if you are going to create a new category of, let's say, chandeliers, and you want to do chandeliers, because I think they're flat pack now, so you can sell chandeliers, you need to have a category of chandeliers. You can't just have two chandeliers and take people to that page, because if you think about the keyword that people are typing in, like crystal chandeliers or whatever, you would, within that keyword, within the people searching for the keyword, there are people looking for a mid-range chandelier, a high-range chandelier, one that's got copper in it, one that hasn't. So in order to be able to recruit on that category keyword, you need to have a range that would serve that whole keyword. Because if you haven't, yeah, you've only got those three products, you're only going to
because we know they don't want to buy the first product that they look at, even if they love that product, you need to convince them that they're in the right place. That same thing about the homepage, I'm going to invest my time here. If you've got one chandelier on there, people aren't going to buy it. They want to go and find other chandeliers. They want to know, well, I don't know if this is the one that I love, so I need to go and have a look what else is out there. What does that mean? Bounce.
Give them enough confidence that's a place for them to basically make the chandelier choice. And so therefore they have to go somewhere else. So you have to really think about your categories. And rather than going, right, we're going to add a little bit over here and a little bit over here.
Well, it's like going into a shop and they've got one chandelier in it.
And that might work. The only way you can sell that is if you can do it through the look. And if you can create a look and you say, well, this is a look we're going for, and you can build by that as part of a look, that would work. But then that's more of a social media ad.
Well, the get the look stuff, we've always found that when you're actually going, you're building the bun, this, like you're taking a picture of a Christmas tree and you've got all these different things with it. And, you're setting up a room and you've got, a rug and a lamp and a desk and a chair and a cushion. It's like that looks, what that does, you don't actually sell those individual items, but what it does do is it helps you sell. You don't sell it's hard to get people to buy the whole look, but what it does do is help you sell the individual item within it, because it increases the desirability of the product. So you're trying to sell that cushion, and you take a picture of a cushion on its own, then that's quite a hard sell. But if you put that cushion into a set and you've got all the other bits with it, then that helps increase the desirability of that cushion. You can't convince somebody to buy a lamp if they're trying to look for cushions. They don't do that. But if you put that cushion next to that lamp that goes with it, then it helps you sell the cushion, because it increases the desirability of product.
It's elevating it, isn't it? It's like as if I was doing an art piece of art. If I did a piece of art and rubbish on the table, it would look rubbish. But if you put it in the Tate Modern and a nice thing and on a wall, everybody would go, oh, I can see what he's doing there. It elevates it. And you're putting a lot of things around it that are tangible things where they go, oh, that's high quality. So therefore that must be high quality. You're anchoring it against other things. That is like, oh, that's an expensive looking house.
Well, you say buying into a look. You're buying into a look, aren't you? You're buying into a lifestyle. You're selling this lifestyle. We always said about, the white companies are always quite good at this. And, in the summertime, their homepage picture has, a family barbecue. And, all the grandkids are there and the grandparents are there. And, and it's like, that's what they're selling. The white company are selling that. It's beautiful summer's day, and the whole family's round. And they make it sound like when you buy that little dish or that soap, candles from the white company, you feel like that's going to happen to you. Your family's going to come around, and that's what they're selling.
Yeah, and there's also a voice talking about it.
Yeah.
It's like, this is what I've created, and this is who I am. And it's, imagine if you were going into a physical store to buy homeware, who would the customer be most convinced of to buy from? Who would they talk to, and what would they be, what would that voice say to them to make them kind of think, oh yeah, they've really got it. I now need to go and do that. And it's finding that voice. So that's it's all about the job.
It's about definitely. So the first thing is about the job to be done, and increasing that desirability on the back of that. And then, but you must do this. You must do this. You must have the offer architecture, because you have to give people a reason to buy now. and not today. And that's what a lot of the really successful e-commerce businesses that scale got those two things. You know, we always talk about you know, the desirability of the brand versus the product that solves a unique problem versus the offer architecture. You know, and the, and the growth will come from those three areas. And, and this is all about desirability and offer architecture.
Well, I mean, otherwise it's dreams, isn't it? People are dreams. They're going to have this house one day and they're going to do this. They're going to do this, something
well,
awesome.
Like
and then
a
you kind of
Pinterest page. It's like, you know, people go on Pinterest and go and research loads of nice images for the house, you know, which is cool. But obviously you've got to get them to buy.
And it's like, you've got to cut through that and say, well, actually, this vision you've got, you're going to lose it tomorrow because we're selling out at this one, or this is the end of, you know, this is the last chance you'll get to buy this before the new things comes in, or this is the offer that's going to run out, or there's a gift with purchase, so you can get that more of that look today rather than tomorrow. You have to have that conversation saying, well, you've got this dream, but, you know, when is this going to happen for you? When are you going to do it?
I know. And you know what? And so then, because I'm just going through my thoughts in my head. So once you know, you create the desirability of product, and obviously the imagery is very important, and you've got to sell the look. And then obviously you've got to solve get rid of the objections, and there'll be lots of objections about delivery and all that kind of stuff. And obviously you've got the offer architecture. Then what's really interesting is the lifetime customer value, because obviously the main metrics that we always talk about is the cost to recruit a new customer, and then the value over a lifetime that customer is to your business. And then, so it's about lifetime customer value. And what we see more than anything in emotional products or lifestyle products is that if they're going to multi-buy again, they tend to do it quite quickly. And if you compare that against a problem-solving rational purchase where, you know, if they don't need that car battery, they don't, you know, you can't sell them a car battery. They don't need
one.
So it's like, you know, they've got a problem solved. Whereas when you're selling homeware, you know the job that they're doing. That job that they're doing is doing at their house because they want to sell it, or they're having a dinner party, or it's Christmas coming up, or, they're in that mode, aren't they? So,
You hit them hard.
Yeah. So, you know, so if they buy a lamp from you, you know, they're buying a lamp for the lounge. You know that they're doing up the lounge. So you can sell the other stuff at the same time.
Yeah.
This is how we shop. If you think about it, when you do up your house, you don't just buy one random bit. You buy stuff.
They will take a lot more emails during that period than they would normally take.
So you hit them hard and you add value
and you reach out to them
and
you talk to them and as if you're there for them, and you, like with personalized emails, maybe they're not actually personal emails, but
it could be an email from the founder saying, oh, we're so thank you, you know, welcome to our brand, you know, we're so proud and passionate, you know, here's £20 off your next order.
And also, those kind of emails, the short emails work the best, don't they?
Yeah.
The short emails, personal emails. If you're doing a personal email, don't write War and Peace, because they'll know that the longer it is, the more they'll be able to see that it's copy and paste.
Well, you're nanoseconds, you know. So I think that's key. So that, you know, and I know that we've tested this so many times, but the post-purchase upsell emails you do, you know, the closer you get to the... I mean, okay, story goes, we had a client doing post-purchase emails, and we started off, it was a month after the items were delivered, and it was a good offer. And then we said, well, let's test it, getting closer to the time that customer bought, to see what would happen to the conversion rate of this, and what would happen to the multi-buy. And every time we moved it closer to the purchase date, conversion rate went up. So from a month to 3 weeks, 2 weeks, 1 week, 5 days, 3 days, 2 days, what? And then eventually we did it like after an hour of the order. We didn't even wait till it being delivered. We didn't care. We don't care. We didn't wait to be delivered. because we knew that they were being recruited on a good on an offer, and we were able to give them a reason to buy again quickly, because they'd all looked at stuff. They're in that buying mode. There's that cognitive dissonance theory where, you know, you know that they're looking for things to reassure themselves that that was a good decision. So the hype, they're just ready, and they love it, and they're excited. And so that's when you should hit them, especially now if you're selling. It might be your only chance, because in 6 months' time, they're not going to be in the mode of doing up that room, that house. There's some other bloody problem that's happened in life.
They're doing some other focus, aren't they? Maybe they're focused on fitness, or they're doing, you know, it's like,
booking a holiday, you're just noise. You're just wasting noise, and no one cares. So you've got to, and I believe that within these type of businesses, the brands are built when you get your products in a customer's hand. And these guys then become brand ambassadors, and they buy into your brand, and they identify themselves as your brand. And that's where the brand comes from. So I think that's fascinating, that lifetime customer value. And it's like, you've got to, unless they buy from you within the first almost 2 months, you know, if you're selling, you know, typical homeware things, you know, that are, you know, I'm not talking about a wardrobe for £1,000, but your typical things, you know, you've really, if they don't buy again quickly, it almost like they're not going to buy again ever.
No.
You know, so you've got to get them on the list.
On the flip side of that, I would say that these homeware businesses, they are email businesses. They are email businesses.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's where that is the powerhouse behind the business, is their house files, because they do shift a lot of stock during Black Friday, Christmas sales, Boxing Day sales, mid-season sales. That's when they do a lot of it. So the rest of the year is, you know, recruiting profitably from Google Shopping, Facebook, Instagram advertising, getting people onto the list, and building that house file. So that's kind of where it works. But you know, what we're trying to give people here in this podcast is the kind of framework for doing that, and to recruit with a successful look, feel, vision, voice, bring it onto the email list, sell to them within 30 days, and then be able to sell considerable amount of product later on.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's certainly easier said than done. I mean, I know there's a couple of other little things I think are quite good. Your names are important. What you call on your product is important. So
that was that was a mistake one customer made, wasn't it?
They called, so it was like, I think I've probably said this before, but I'll say it again anyway. There's a vintage Liberty style wingback chair. You know, that sort of, you can sort of picture what that chair is, what it looks like. Well, the client called it something like midnight stroll in Paris, you know, chair. And it's like, well, we know what you're trying to do. You're trying to create that emotive story, but no one is going to search for that. And the Google Shopping is the thing that's really driving a lot of this because it's visual. And obviously, you know, and obviously there's other products, Facebook and things that have come through, but you've got to get your product names right.
Yeah.
Because obviously it's all done through the image.
Done through the image. I mean, you can put things in the name, and you can have different names in Google Shopping than you can have on your site. And that's something we've been teaching. But it's getting...
So people are searching for, you know, marble side table with gold legs.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they're searching for. They're not searching for, you know, mist of marble. No one's searching for that. So they're searching for things that what it actually is, and then it's sold through the image. So that's quite important to get right. I think then the other like there's some really clever stuff that like Wayfair and Made.com are doing. And it's when you're coming through Google Shopping. They don't take you to the product page because they know that otherwise, if they do, they're just going to bounce off straight away. They take you to this dynamic category page. So you've got the product that you've clicked on from Google Shopping at the top.
Yeah, which is still quite big. It's a lot bigger than the other products.
Yeah, because obviously, in order for it to be allowed, you have to let people buy the product that they've clicked on that page. Yeah. You can't take them to a category page. So what they've done, so left that product at the top, which you can click through on, or you can buy from that page. But underneath that, it's like a category page. So if you're searching for red rug, you know, in Google, and you click on the Google Shopping app for red rug, I mean, bloody hundreds of, you're never going to buy the first red rug that you'd land on. So they take you to a category that's got all the red rugs showing on it. I mean, it's hundreds. I mean, and that's like a no-brainer. It's like so obvious, isn't it? And that, also, that is a game changer.
You know, people also search for specific things that they think are high quality. Like, say, it's a rug. They might search for a certain weave count or something like that, or they might search for this. So, therefore, you want to sell in Google Shopping and put yourself apart from that. You have to basically have that in the title. Otherwise, people won't know. It's like when you're selling jumpers. You know, it's cashmere jumper. You've got to have cashmere jumper in the, you've got to have cashmere in the title. Otherwise, you're not going to come up for the others. You know, and therefore, when you are selling on things like Google Shopping, it's different than when you're selling on the site, because when people are on the site, they're in the cashmere category and they can see that it's cashmere jumper because it's, maybe it's got a subtitle, it's cashmere, and it's like got things on it. But like if on Google Shopping, the only thing you've got to go on is the title and the image, you have to put the information there. Otherwise, they're not going to be able to know. And Google's not going to bring those people to that product. So,
no, of course. And I think probably the only other thing to mention is about the anxieties. I mean, people, you know, because it's often homeware can be big and bulky and fragile. People get worried about delivery.
Yeah.
You know, they get really worried about it. So you then got to make sure you're putting a lot of reassurance around how you pack it and how it's going to arrive. And, you know, if this is how it happens. And, you know, we've got, you know, live fast track delivery and all those kind of things. But like, you know, without a desirability, your first thing you've got to do is get your desirability of product up. And then you've got to go into your objection handling, which is all getting rid of all your anxieties and present that image that, oh, people like me have really benefited from this site and trust, you know, and I buy into this brand and all my anxieties are gone. And then you've got to give them the reason to act now through the offer architecture with a time bound offer architecture. And then you sell stuff to them again to get your lifetime customer value up straight away. And then you obviously, it's about email. So, you know, you then build up your house file and you're doing a lot of email data capture all the time. So you've then got, you can put them into this automated sequence. And they can be beautiful businesses and they can be really simple to scale.
Yeah.
They can, and they can be super profitable.
Yeah, the talent is in the founder, who is a good purchaser and also a good photographer. And they're not, you know, not the photographer themselves, but how they put it together and the look. That is their core that they need to focus on. Everything else can be outsourced. That is their core business. They get that right and they'll get everything else right. So, you know, don't try and do everything. Just make sure you get the core bit right, because everything is leveraged off that work, and so therefore that's where you should be focusing. Obviously, when you're tiny, you're gonna have to do everything yourself, but you know, that's where you're going to get your skills up: understanding the voice, understanding talking, understanding the vision, understanding what's selling, understanding what's trending, understanding what you can buy, understanding what how to quickly respond to trends. You know, don't be sitting on a wave and be able to sell a lot more and then go, oh God, if only I could have got that more in stock. You know, it's being able to be a reactor.
Colors and stuff. Yeah.
It's like the Zara model, the Zara clothing model.
It's fashion.
Yeah.
It's fashion, really. It is like selling fashion, but slightly less around, you know, how obviously so fast fashion is like literally new products every 3 weeks. If you don't bring out a new product every 3 weeks, you die.
No.
It's not quite as bad as that, but it's got an element of that.
And they will have certain products to sell all the time. Like maybe you have a set of wooden stools that is just your thing, that's just going to sell over and over and over again. Mm. So it just depends where you're going. Well, I think we've done 38 minutes. So I think we've covered it.
So you'll have to edit it, cut it out.
No, just leave it. Okay. Anyway, so that's homeware. That's our visions on homeware. That's our methodology on homeware and how it all fits together. If you do have any questions, please get in touch. Let us know. Sorry, I'm walking up a hill. What you want to do. And also look at the case study, which is in the show notes. And get on the email list so you can see the bonus content we're doing as well. So anyway,
one thing I would say, hang on.
Sorry.
I think actually that everybody knows that, I don't know if everybody knows, but we've done a course. And I'm not saying this because I think I want, like, as far as I'm concerned, I'd want you all to have it as free because I just want to help each other. Mark, you're a little bit nastier than me. You want to charge people for it.
Good cut,
but
bad
I think
cut.
Actually, I went for a run this weekend and I was re-listening to some of the modules that Mark, you did. And I listened to them again on Sunday morning. And you know what? It's so, so powerful. The stuff that you're talking about and the way that you put it together, and I think it's phenomenal. And on it, I would absolutely encourage you all. And I'm not saying this because it's us that's done it, but I think Mark, I'm really proud of you for doing that. And I think it's awesome. And I think everybody would really enjoy it.
Okay. So good.
Go and do it. And if you think it's crap, but I think it's absolutely phenomenal. I think I really, really do genuinely believe the stuff that you've done. It's like, how was it, like 40 modules, 40 training, little videos. It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
Well, I think the easiest way to get started, very low cost way to get started, is to buy the book. So you go to ecommercebook.co.uk. And you can get that for, that's £5.50, or you can get the audiobook for £9.95, yeah. I think. And that gives you, there's a couple of bonuses in there. The book's obviously in there. And there's a few things to follow up in there. So that's going to get you started. And then you're going to get some of the free trainings as well. We add you to a Facebook group and all that kind of stuff. So just getting into that ecosystem is a way of getting started for a small amount of money. And so if you are small and getting started, that's probably one of the easiest things to do. And start there, and then we can... And we can start having a conversation about what's right for you.
Yeah. Okay, right. We'll leave it there.
Awesome.
Nick, we'll do a good podcast next week.
Yeah, see you all next
week. Exciting. Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.